It's time for Sweet Home Cannabama, a show that'll answer all your questions, provide accurate information, and dispel the myths of cannabis. And have your specific questions answered by emailing jennifer@cannabama.com or text or call 343-0106. And now, for all things cannabis in Alabama, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Jennifer Boozer, your host, owner of Cannabama in downtown Mobile. We are located at 558 St. Francis Street. Our phone number is 251-255-5155. Our website is cannabama.com. And all of our social media pages are under Sweet Home Cannabama, but don't look for us on Facebook. Still totally banned. welcome to the show, everybody. HB 445 is set to go into effect July 1st. That is the hemp, not a ban bill. That's a ban bill. Smokable flower of any kind will be banned, and possession or sale will carry a Class C felony. The Attorney General, Steve Marshall, has made it very clear that he intends to encourage law enforcement to come on in and start enforcing. You have 14 days from today to shop before we lose these products, and we will have to get them out of the state somehow or destroy them. So please go and shop with your local hemp dispensaries while you can and help support these people as we try to make the financial provisions needed to adjust and lose a massive percentage of our sales and try to recover from that. That's why I say this bill isn't, they didn't call it a ban because they didn't ban it, and we should be grateful, except they're not leaving us anything to actually remain in business with. So, again, that is July 1st. There is a hemp rally in Birmingham on June 20th at Elysian Garden from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. It's free to the public, and as long as you're 21 and up, and we will be checking IDs at the door because, again, we are responsible, and we do that anyway. There will be music, food, speakers. I know of some candidates for various offices around the state that have said they were going to be there. We were going to have speakers and stuff, so you'll be able to meet people. If you're in the industry, I mean, there's tons of people that I talked to for years. I've never been in the same room with them. I'm really excited about that. I think we all are. I've met so many new people just since we've been having to go to the State House this year and really rally together. And I'm really excited to see those people again and to see the people, like I say, the ones that I've known forever that I've never gotten to hug their necks. And I know everybody is feeling sort of the stress, the chaos, the uncertainty of what's happening. And so we want to get together as an industry with our supporters, the public, anybody who can and wants to attend. We really want to have a night of advocacy and really commiseration and friendship because, man, the people that do what we do, we're all people. And so this has been really hard for all of us, and the uncertainty goes far beyond what products we can sell. It's what happens to our regulars and the new people that are just discovering us that are going to suffer if these measures are put into place, and it looks like they are. So join us in Birmingham on the 20th. That's this Friday from 6 to 10, Elysian Garden in Birmingham. I will be going up, and I'm really so excited about this event. Real quick, in medical cannabis news, five parents have filed a lawsuit against the AMCC, the Alabama Medical Cannabis Commission, for not creating a patient and caregiver registry. The AMCC says it's beyond their control, and a hearing is scheduled for June 26th. So one thing I want to talk about, I know I mentioned on the last show that Texas was having a silent protest at the ribbon cutting for a mental health facility. I believe it was in Amarillo, and Dan Patrick, the lieutenant governor there, who has spearheaded their full THC ban, they were going to go, and they did go and protest silently, and Dan Patrick did not show up. But one of the girls that I follow on TikTok that I found all this out about, she actually found out that he was going to be at the airport and went and tried to go in as a member of the press. She is a member of the press and asked questions, and he cut the meeting short and left. So Not sure what's going on there, but that's probably a good sign for Texas. But anyway, we are definitely in a very similar boat as Texas, and we wish our brothers and sisters in that big, giant old state with a $9 billion industry the best of luck. And we're praying for y'all, and we hope you're praying for us too, because we're all in this together. Tonight, I want to go ahead and introduce our guest. He is a good friend of mine that I met through the National Industrial Hemp Coalition a few years ago. Scott McStacy is a Virginia-based agricultural entrepreneur and hemp industry activist. He serves as the owner of Seed to Structure LLC and is the founder of Hemptastic Ideas Mobile Hemp, mobile, not mobile, Hemptastic Ideas Mobile Hemp School, where he champions regenerative farming practices and promotes the versatility of hemp through workshops, education, and sustainable agriculture initiatives. Scott has been a registered hemp grower since 2019 in Virginia and actively hosts public events like Hempcrete workshops during Virginia Hemp Month. He is currently developing a certificate program in cannabis industry education. Scott sits on the board of advisors for the Virginia Hemp Coalition and is a member of the U.S. Hemp Building Association. Scott, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, let's get into it. Tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got into hemp. Most of us did something else. I was a stay-at-home mom, so I don't know if people would consider that something else. It was something else for me, but we all had other careers before this, and so we're interested. How did you get here?
Yeah, well, you know, I came to this through a colon tumor.
Wow.
Which was, 22 years ago, I had a mass in my sigmoid colon, and I didn't know I had it, and it burst.
Wow.
And so I ended up nearly dying. A surgeon saved me on the table, and then when he sent me home, he suggested that I try medical cannabis.
22 years ago?
That was 22 years, 2003 in Virginia. It was a felony at the time for him to even talk about it.
I bet it was. That's incredible.
Yeah, and he sent me home with it, and you know, it saved my life. And so I kind of dedicated the rest of what I've got left to the plant itself, medicinally, first of all,
mm-hmm.
and then as I went down the rabbit hole, I found so many other things.
Right.
And one of them being hempcrete. You know, that's been my big kind of go-to thing, and it's been an amazing journey.
Well, it sounds like it. I mean, I knew that a lot about you, but I did not know that about you, and the fact that someone in Virginia suggested it that long ago when it wasn't even on the horizon yet. That says a lot to me about the way that there are plenty of medical professionals out there, even that far, that long ago, that value the plant and know that when people are in a bad situation like you were, obviously you were probably pretty sick, right?
Yeah, the tumor was about 11 inches long.
Oh.
And so removing it took about a third of my total GI tract. So
wow.
it was very, very traumatic. Yes.
Well, I've had several abdominal surgeries, and that I would not wish on anyone. Whoo, man, just thinking about it gives me chills. Ooh, I cannot imagine. Well, tell us a little bit, what is hempcrete? I mean, I know we know that it makes building material and it's made out of hemp, but what exactly is hempcrete?
Sure. Well, in the code, and the technical name is hemp lime construction.
Okay.
And the reason that's the technical name is because hempcrete isn't exactly like concrete. It's not the same in many ways. It has similar properties, but not completely.
Right.
So hemp lime construction is kind of a better way to go about it.
Okay.
But it's basically a very simple concept. You take the inner stalk of the industrial hemp plant, which is called herd. It's mm-hmm. just cellulose. It looks like little broken matchsticks.
Mm-hmm.
You mix it with lime, a little bit of volcanic ash, and water,
mm-hmm.
and you mix it into almost like an oatmeal substance.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can build with it in three different ways. You can make blocks out of it,
mm-hmm.
and then you can take those blocks and build your structures with it.
Mm-hmm.
you can cast it in place. It's usually about a 12-inch thick wall, so you can put forms up and tamp it into the forms.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a more modern way now where you can actually spray it through with a machine. There's a number of machines on the market, but you can actually spray it, and it actually accumulates against the walls, and it's much more efficient that way. So
right.
What it is basically it becomes the walls of your home.
Okay.
You know, it's very insulated.
All right. Can hold that thought. We've got to go to our first commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about hempcrete with Scott McStacy. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about cannabis, here's your host, Jennifer Booser.
Welcome back, everybody. Tonight we're talking with Scott McStacy from Virginia about hempcrete, or what did you call it? Hemp, lime, I already forgot.
Hemp, lime, construction.
Yes. See, I didn't want to say the wrong word. I thought that was it. One thing before I go back to how you can use it, I've never heard of the volcanic ash part. I've heard of the lime and the water and the herd and all. I've never heard anybody say volcanic ash. Why?
Sure. Well, it's actually a pozzolan, which is just it's just something like a volcanic ash or metakaolin or a fired clay, something that acts as a drying and curing agent.
Okay.
Just makes it dry faster and cure harder.
Okay.
That's kind of the little thing that makes it really perfect.
Right. It's like that secret ingredient, I guess, because I've never heard of it. So somebody's keeping it a secret. So you said you can use the hemp, the hemp lime construction and make it into blocks. You can form it in like a 12-inch wall with the wood forming it. I'm saying this so badly. And then you can spray it. And I've actually seen video of the spray, and that is cool.
I agree. Yeah, the spraying is really, really advanced,
mm-hmm.
And you can use it in so many different places. It's a lot more efficient.
Is that something, and forgive my ignorance, that's why you're here on the show and I'm asking the questions and not answering them, but is it something that can be used to, like, insulate, or is that a different product?
No, you know, hemp lime construction, a.k.a. hempcrete, is really the insulation. It's in the code as a rigid insulation.
Right, okay. So, and then I've also read that when you have a home that's walls are made out of hempcrete, the air in the home is a whole lot cleaner, like 30% cleaner, because it acts like a whole home filter almost.
Yes, there are a number of things that the hempcrete does. First of all, it regulates humidity inside the room,
nice.
Inside the building itself. Yeah,
that would be handy down here in subtropical Alabama.
Absolutely.
Yes,
it really helps with regulating that. There's other things too, though. If you use a clay plaster on the inside walls. You get a positive ions from that clay, which can go out into the air and actually attach to water droplets that have germs in them. It makes it a little heavier, and they drop to the floor.
Wow.
So there are really neat natural ways that these buildings can help. They typically will not mold.
Right.
There's no mildew. They're very fire resistant.
Yes, that's a huge component. I think I've seen, I'm sure a lot of people have seen it. There's a video that's been circulating for years, and the guy has like a big, you know, 6-inch puck of hempcrete, and it's glowing red with a torch on this side, and his hand is on the other side, and it's cool. And I thought that was really cool, that it's fire resistant and can keep the home from burning down like a wood and whatever else house, right?
Absolutely. It doesn't become fuel for the fire. It just smolders and it turns black, but it really won't burn through.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of tests and a lot of studies on that.
Yeah, I think that is such a cool feature. Also, what about wind?
Well, you know, it's rigid, and you cast the frame of the house inside the wall. So it really is very, very rigid. You know, you don't have to really worry about wind shear and things like that because it's incredibly strong. Once it's in place and it's fully calcified and it's gone, once it goes into the process of carbonation, then it's really strong. You know, it will withstand winds and even flooding to a degree. If you flood one of these houses out, what you do is you dry it out, and then the wall will actually help get rid of that humidity that's in there that's trapped.
Man.
And dry it out, and you move right back in.
All I keep thinking about is hurricanes and tornadoes down here, man. We are, like today, just trying to drive across the bay from Baldwin County to Mobile County in a torrential downpour. It was immediately, I mean, we're right at sea level. It flash floods here if you spit too hard, you know? So a lot of people get water damage in their homes, and I don't have to tell you about the humidity here. So that's incredible. That is wow. And the mold and mildew resistance. What about pests? I've heard it's pest resistant.
It is, and in multiple ways. Like termites really will not eat it.
Ooh, now you're speaking my language. We got them flying ones here.
Oh, they're big ones down there, aren't
oh,
they?
Yes.
Sure. It's also, you know, even just regular household pests are repelled by it. They just don't. Mice can't really dig through it, so there's really no way for them to get through, and then it just repels most pests.
That's wild. I know the plant itself in the field even has some pest resistance to it, which is why you don't have to use a ton of pesticides.
Right. You don't technically need to use any if you're not in a situation.
So. Right, right. Well, and so what does carbon negative mean as it applies to hempcrete or hemp lime construction?
Sure. Carbon negative is a big word.
Yes. Please explain it to us.
I will. Because, you know, it's hard to wrap your brain around it because everything you do in this world generates carbon or uses carbon in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that leads to lots of different things. Well, the hemp homes, first of all, they sequester while they're growing. The hemp itself will absorb over 1.5 tons of CO2 per acre.
Wow.
And that's just while the hemp is growing.
Right.
Okay. So now once you harvest that, you actually sequester all that carbon into this wall in the form of the herd that you put in. And then that carbon is forever, well, at least until you recycle it at the end of its lifespan, which is about 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that carbon is locked up. So and that is one of the biggest areas that where there's carbon sequestration. But there's also a process in these walls called carbonation. And what happens when you're mixing your lime, it starts as calcium hydroxide. Mm-hmm. And then over the process of mixing, it becomes calcium carbonate, which is limestone.
Right.
So that goes through its lifespan, it starts to go through a process called carbonation. And what that means is it draws carbon out of the air like a sponge its wow. entire lifetime.
Yeah.
So if you take into account that 1.5 tons per acre of carbon there, and you take into account the carbonation process, then you can see that you're actually carbon negative. In other words, you're using way, way, way less carbon, and you're offsetting it in that way.
Right, right. As opposed to traditional building methods, right? And materials.
Right. And sure, traditional building materials, you know, they cause a lot of, you know, the carbon to be released just with, you know, with different things, and a lot of them are sent upon on long distances,
right,
to get to places,
right, and that takes a whole lot of energy and all sorts of resources and creates a lot of waste too, right?
It sure does, well, and we can fix that with natural building.
Well, and it's hemp is so much more sustainable than trees. because you can grow it from seed to fruition in like, what, 4 months? Where a tree might take 20 years to grow big enough that it's usable as construction material, correct?
That's absolutely right. And you can grow them, even some of this that we grow for herd can grow in 80 days.
Right.
So you don't even need 4 months. I mean, some of these plants grow so fast, you can almost see them growing.
Right. I know. I've been to several grows, and the most fun one was a greenhouse grow with 20-foot plants. And it's the craziest experience to wander through. It's like being in a jungle, you know, and there were leaves on this hemp that were bigger than my face. It was crazy, fascinating. How many acres of hemp do you have to grow to build the average house?
Well, you know, a small, 1,000 to 1,200 square foot house, mm-hmm. you could build on anywhere from 3 to 6, maybe 7 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And that depends on the cultivar that you grow, of course. Some of them you can get a lot more biomass out of the acre.
Right.
And you know, some of them you grow for grain and
right.
some you just grow for fiber. So the ones that make the most hempcrete, you can, if you grow one of those varieties, you could be closer to 3 to 4 acres to build a small home.
Right. And that comes down to knowing where to source your seeds from, as far as genetics are concerned, to get those hardier, bigger, more output varieties, correct?
That's right. And that knowing your seed and knowing where your seed is coming from is incredibly important.
Right. Well, I think that goes, that is a fact across the board, no matter the reason you're growing it. The seeds and the genetics, I mean, that's where it all starts and ends. I mean, if you've got to have good genetics and you've got to have a good source for legitimate seeds in order to get anything off the ground, I imagine.
Absolutely. It's got to be a good foundation or it'll be like a house of cards, you know?
Right, right. So we can go from growing trees that take 20 or 30 years to grow, and then all of the negative impact to the environment that cutting all those trees down does, and then creating these building materials, and then, like you said, shipping them across the country, it's much more efficient to be able to grow the hemp much quicker, be able to process it and build right near where the hemp is. When we come back from the break, more with Scott McStacy. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about cannabis, here's your host, Jennifer Booser.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sweet Home Cannabama. We're here every Monday night, almost 6 years now. We're about to have another anniversary, y'all. In about 3 weeks, it'll be our 6th anniversary. But we're here every Monday night, 7 o'clock Central. We're here live on the Gulf Coast on FM Talk 106.5. You can listen to us live from anywhere on the radio at fmtalk1065.com. And you can watch us here on X, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, all the places. And you can also find us on Citizen Green TV, on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon. Excuse me. Scott, let's get back into this. I think the carbon negative thing is a huge plus for this as sort of the future of sustainable building materials. I'm sure you agree.
I do. I think that's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
But there's more to it than that, too, you know.
Right. Of course.
If you think about, you know, the environmental impact is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But the economic impact could be so much more.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is, you know, once we can start to grow this plant regionally all over the place,
mm-hmm.
we can generate these local circular economies.
Yes.
Where it's the materials are grown right there in that county or in the county next door.
Mm-hmm.
It's processed and it's made into things, not just hempcrete homes.
Right.
But, you know, all kinds of things. There's over 250,000 things that you can make from this plant and counting.
Right.
And many of those things are needed here. It wouldn't just help the economy, but it would also help us in a way, because we wouldn't be dependent on other countries for our raw resources and the things that we're buying overseas. You know, we could grow it here and build it here and make it here.
Right. And that creates jobs on every level, because you've got to have people that know how to grow it and work those fields. You've got to have people who know how to harvest it, who know how to process it, and then the people who know how to apply it as a building material or whatever else is being done. That creates manufacturing jobs. That creates new industry. Again, here's the hemp plant, because I know people are doing this in limited ways all over the country, but on the whole, it's not happening. You know, as a normal everyday, yeah, we're going to build a hemp grade house. That's just not a thing yet. So how do we accelerate that? How do we get hemp lime construction material to be something that every state has access to, that people are getting training in this, that people understand the value of it? You know, what do we do to get more people on board with this as a farming commodity, as a way to make manufacturing jobs, and as a sustainable and eco-friendly building material, among other things?
Among many things, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, the way is, as it is with many other things, education.
Mm-hmm.
And I truly believe one of my main missions in life is to talk to as many people as I can get in front of about this and everything about hemp, not just hempcrete. Hempcrete's fantastic, but
yes,
there's so much more.
I can relate to that mission. I can relate to that mission. That is a similar mission to mine, is teach as many people as possible what it is, what it does, how it works, how to use it, whether it's medicine or building materials or plastics or biodiesel or whatever. The plant deserves to be fully known by us, and we deserve to be able to fully access it.
I agree. And this is one of the ways where we can access it on so many levels.
Yes.
You know, there's just so many things you can do. And it's everything that you do with this plant is sustainable.
Right.
You can even use the roots to make a salve that you can use for burns and for all kinds of things.
And then there, like you said, there's bioremediation that happens in whatever soil it's planted in. I know for consumables, it's very important what your soil contains, because that plant is going to suck it out of the soil. And if there's bad stuff in it, it's going to come up into that plant. So, and I know there are places in the world where they use it to get the radiation out of the soil, to get impurities and fertilizers and things that are not good for our soil or our food or our commodities, and get it out of the soil. So there's that aspect of it as well. Not even using it as a building material or a consumable, it can actually clean the dirt and make it usable again.
It does, and it goes even farther than that. The phytoremediation value of hemp and cannabis in general is off the chart. It will take heavy metals.
Yep.
It will take rare earth elements. It'll take all kinds of stuff out of the soil, you know, glyphosate. I mean, it'll take all this stuff out.
Right.
And the other thing it does is it conditions the soil. The root goes very deep. Mm-hmm. And then when you cut the plant off, that root, most of the time the root stays, and that feeds the microbiome. Mm. It actually helps. Everything has a little bit of food in there, a little bit of nutrient.
Right.
I even utilize mycelium networks, which is a fungal network, which can even take that a little farther.
Really?
So, you know, I have a system I call the Hemp Three Sisters, and the industrial hemp is the main crop.
Mm-hmm.
You grow short red clover at the base during and after the season, and then in the soil there is a mycelium network that is, you start before the seeds go in, and then the seeds activate the spores. The mycelium then will actually congregate on the roots, and they will all work together.
Wow.
And finding nutrients and feeding the plants. The plants feed the mycelium carbohydrate. So it becomes a really closed system, and it can really regenerate the soil.
A little tiny ecosystem. That's crazy. I never knew that. That's man, there's so many smart people in the world. Thank you, Scott, for doing this. I'm so amazed just talking about it. And I knew a lot of this stuff already, but, man, just hearing it in a fuller and more detailed way, thank you so much. Let me ask you this. Are there legal or legislative roadblocks for using hemp as a building material or plastic or biodiesel? What are the rules? I mean, is that a thing? I know that there are approval processes and things like that. As far as building materials go, it's not just a free-for-all, obviously, and I forgive my ignorance, but I know it has. Somebody's got to approve of it, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's in the International Residential Code now, mm-hmm. As well as domestic codes. And so, you can do this in a permitted home, of course, now. And that's a big, big deal.
Mm-hmm.
There were 12 very famous hempcrete people that got together, and they really pushed to get it in the IRC. And thank you to all of them that are out there.
Yes.
Because, you know, being in the code, that's the first big step. And then now that it's in the code, we can talk about it. We can, you know, expand people's knowledge about it.
Right.
We can market it. We can get the things that need to happen to get it to start in more in earnest than it is already.
Right. Right. So you don't, well, let me ask you this, because we are definitely dealing with some hemp bills. I'm sure you've heard. Do any of the bills in the southeastern states that are banning or downright near banning hemp altogether, is that affecting the industrial applications? Because I know hemp is all lumped into one thing right now, and there's no real separation in testing and things like that. I believe that that's something that they're trying to address on the federal level. But, you know, the testing standards, you know, is there a THC limit test when you're growing it for hempcrete? How does that work?
Yes, unfortunately, the standards for hemp are all the same category. So
right.
You've got hemp and you have high THC cannabis on the other side.
Right. Well, I imagine logically, you know, you think, well, if they're growing it simply to chop it up and make a house out of it, who cares how much THC is in it, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the things that we're pushing, is trying to get kind of have its own lane.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, being kind of connected tightly to everything else,
right?
You know, why don't we come over here to the left a little bit and go up this way?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this:
really expand the industry.
Are the plants that you would use for industrial building materials, do they have any buds that would be desirable as a consumable? Or is it a totally different type of plant that you wouldn't ever want to use it in your body? It's strictly for the herd, the fiber, that kind of thing. Or is it kind of a combination of those things?
Well, they are kind of separate. And you know, there is a flower on, like, the grain varieties.
Right.
But
you
got to
have the seeds.
Grain,
yeah.
And the grain, but the grain degrades any cannabinoids that would be in there.
Right.
Because once you start producing that seed, that's what the plant is focusing on.
Right.
So you could take that flower and you could smoke a pound of it and you'd get nothing but a headache.
Right.
So and that's one of the reasons we want, and we being the groups that we all kind of talk together about what would be the best to get this moving.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing is, if we could have a certified seed program, then we could have, you could do this without the testing requirements. If you knew the seed was good, it had a proven track record of not going hot.
Right.
Because what if it goes over by 2/10 of a point?
Or right.
Or 2/100.
And they have
point?
To burn.
It doesn't matter.
They burn your acres, and then you got no home either.
Right. Then you're in, yeah, you're not.
And you're in a whole lot of debt if you're not in jail, you know? I mean, that's the scary part. If you're growing it, knowing those seeds are not going to produce a plant that's good for consumables, you know, I would think, again, who cares how much THC might be in the root? The root's going to stay in the ground, like you just said. You know, who cares how much might be in the stock of it, because the herd is going to be ground up and used to make a building. You know, so there should, I agree that there should be different standards. And if you can know by just the seed that it won't be an issue, then those testing standards ought to only apply to consumables. When we come back, we're going to finish up with Scott McStacy. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about cannabis, here's your host, Jennifer Booser.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been talking with Scott McStacy from Virginia about hemp lime construction, also known as hempcrete. Scott, what do you think is holding back this industry, the building materials specifically, and not the consumables? We know what's holding that back. Or trying to. But what is the holdup with the proliferation of the use of this product?
Well, you know, I think part of it is that, you know, we don't have a robust production level, if you will.
Right.
There aren't we should have decorticators, and eventually we will have decorticators every 100 to 200 miles
right.
throughout the agricultural parts of the country.
Right.
And then, you know, that's part of it is we don't have that level of the manufacturing side of it yet.
Right. Everybody has the ability to grow it because that's pretty cut and dry. If you have land and a license and someone who knows what they're doing, you can grow it. But then what do you do with it? You got to have these
right.
big old machines, and nobody has these big old machines.
That's right, and that's where we have to make this investment into our future, and that's where local and state governments come in, I think, giving incentives to investors that want to come in and do decortication centers.
Right.
We're working on a bill here in Virginia that could really help in that regard by promoting, you know, industrial hemp. So, you know, the big thing holding it back also, and we said this earlier, is education, because
yes.
when people find out about this product, and I'm sure there are people listening to us right now that are going, I want this.
Right.
how have I not known
about this? Yeah. I mean, I've learned a ton.
Yeah. But that's it. Once they know, and some people just get on a mission, they're just going to build one and
yeah.
they're going to do it, you know. The other thing that we can do to help get this more mainstream is to start really promoting making affordable homes as well as these nicer, really fancy homes that,
right.
that have been heretofore made. I think there's definitely a place for hempcrete in the affordable homes market.
Well, and I'll make a shameless plug for our guest from last week with the Vivescent Wellness Foundation. That's exactly why that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, because I know you're such an expert and so experienced with hempcrete, because last week we did introduce the idea of using hempcrete and other sustainable things and repurposed things to create affordable workforce housing in areas that need this stuff. We're not talking about building McMansions here. We want to build normal people homes in places that there is no housing, and that is happening all over the country. And you know, I don't know if you've priced a two-bedroom apartment lately, but holy crap, you know, compared to the income, especially in a state like Alabama, I don't know how anybody's affording to live anymore. You know, it's insane if you're in the rental market, and that it prices people out of living, and that can't be right, you know. We got to do something for normal people, not just people who have the means to build their own home. I mean, I have a decent income, and I can't even conceive of that because it's just out of my price range, you know, and I do okay. The state of Alabama would like me not to and trying real hard. But, you know, I mean, most people can't just go, oh, I want to build a house and let's do hempcrete, especially when it is sort of an exotic building material right now with the absence of the machinery and the processing and the proximity to where the houses need to be built. Those are all things that I guess would make the price of those construction materials higher.
Yeah, currently it is higher, and the caveat to that, though, is that with all the other materials being higher now, hempcrete is, I think hempcrete is you know, we're achieving parity, I believe. I don't think we're, you know, in 2-3 years ago, I would have told you, yeah, it's significantly more expensive.
I have been told that it is pretty comparable now.
It has, it's gotten there. And the more local development that we do, the more growing it in localities and using it in those areas, the more of that we do,
right,
the cheaper it's going to be and the better it's going to be in the long run.
Well, real quick, because I'm worried we're going to run out of time, but I want to say, can you tell us about the Hemptastic Ideas Mobile Hemp School? Because, you know, I love to teach somebody about some hemp. So tell me what it is and where the idea came from.
Well, yeah, so the Hemptastic Ideas Mobile Hemp School is my vehicle for teaching the public everything hemp. It's not just about hempcrete, but
right,
hempcrete is the main focus of our workshops. But I do an 8-hour workshop that focuses on a lot of things in the beginning in a lecture format, where we talk about the ancient history of cannabis. We talk about all the modern commercial applications. I go through a PowerPoint where they can kind of see pictures of things. And then we get our hands dirty and we actually make something out of hempcrete.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, when people get their hands in it and they're tamping it into these forms and they see this progress as things go up, you know, I just see joy in their eyes.
Yeah, well, it's such a foreign concept to most people. And you know, it's fascinating to know that we've had the ability to do this for a long, long time. But because of stuff that happened 100 years ago almost, we have not had the ability to grow hemp until recently. And so, you know, cannabis and hemp, you know, these are legal terms. The plant is not new. It is just new in these ways. It's new to us. And the ability to have access to it, grow it, consume it, that is very new, because none of us were around when the Marijuana Tax Act wiped it out, you know, and probably not many people are. But it's not new. It's just new to us. So the education component is the most important. You have a bus, right?
No, I have a 12-foot trailer that I pull.
Okay, I thought it was a bus.
No, we're working on a green bus. That is my goal.
Okay,
small green bus.
Okay,
but yeah, I take everything. I have a mixer and I have all the stuff in my trailer, and I just pull it all out and we start working together. You know, got
right,
a lot of tools and wood and, you know, just a bunch of stuff.
Kind of like a bigger version of when you get to go and learn how to. What is it called when you throw pots or whatever and you get to make ceramics and get to actually get your hands in it and do something with it? I think that that's a really great educational tool, because so many people learn by doing and learn by seeing. And seeing something on a picture or on a screen or hearing it is great, but when you get to see it, touch it, and do it, that is a level of comprehension that you just can't read in a book. Don't you agree?
I do agree. It's so different doing it, you
yes,
know, for real.
Yes. I mean, and I have yet to see real hempcrete, I think. Nope, that's not true. At the Southern Hemp Expo in Nashville in 2019, I saw some hempcrete and some other things made out of hemp, some clothes and hats and all. We've sold hats made out of hemp fiber and shoes and stuff like that. Before we get too far off in the weeds, I want to be able to connect anybody who does hear what we've said tonight and want more information or want to get their hands dirty or want to know more about how they can learn more. Where will they find you, and where would they be able to get in touch with you?
Okay, so the easiest way is on my Facebook page, which is Seed to Structure Hemp Construction Company. I'm the only Seed to Structure there.
Okay.
And we have all of our events on that page.
Okay.
I'm doing a workshop the 28th and 29th near Richmond, Virginia.
Okay.
And you can find out about that at virginiahempmonth.com.
Okay.
So those are kind of the easiest ways. If anyone really wants to get in touch with me, though, you know, get a hold of Jennifer and she'll.
I will surely pass them along. Thank you so much, Scott, for being with us tonight, for all of the cool stuff that you just taught us about how we can further fully use the plant. And don't forget, we have a hemp rally on Friday the 20th at 6 p.m. Birmingham at Elysian Gardens. And join us next week for a look at cannabis accounting practices with Susan Russo from Dope CFO in Jasper, Alabama. God bless you, and God bless Alabama Hemp.